Our reading comes from a speech by Senator Cory Booker. My father would say to me, "You need to understand something. You drink deeply from wells of freedom and liberty and opportunity that you did not dig. You eat lavishly from banquet tables prepared for you by your ancestors. You sit under the shade of trees you did not plant or cultivate or care for. You have a choice in life. You can just sit back, getting fat, dumb, and happy, consuming all the blessings put before you. Or it can metabolize inside of you, become fuel to get you into the fight, to make this democracy real, to make it true to its words that we can be a nation of liberty and justice for all." What a treat it is to be here today, preaching my first ever sermon in this hall with my father as worship associate. A quarter century ago, when this room was brand new, this community called me in with a baby dedication ceremony. Whether you were here that day or this is your first time joining us, welcome to my first and longest spiritual home, and thank you for being a part of it. Thank you for welcoming me back in a new role. My 18 years running through these halls and these beautiful wooded grounds were so formative. Socially, this was the center of my world, especially before my teens, when high school and the internet encroached. Here, as a younger child, I remember falling prey to my older brother's tricks and lies. He was more brazen when he had friends to impress. Friends who could also assist him. But this is also where I often learned to spot the wool over my eyes. I too had allies here. This is where my parents showed me their values. They never directly instructed me here. Better yet, they demonstrated true service of a community. I saw them step up for visible leadership and unglamorous service alike. Time and again, at home, I would overhear my mom say to my father, "This will overwhelm me, but someone needs to do it." And usually she said yes. In particular, here I saw my mother teach religious education, chair the landscape committee, and donate services and events to the auction. I saw my dad teach OWL, chair the worship committee, preach, and serve as president of the board. Okay, so I have already taught OWL, and I chair my worship committee, and here I am preaching. So please, no one call up the nominating committee at UUSF and offer my name for board president. I don't want to do it. But it wasn't just my parents. I was raised in a community of friends' parents, of staff, of religious education teachers, of everyone who made this church what it is. Many people made sacrifices of time, money, and stress. It was truly, as Senator Booker calls it, a conspiracy of love. The immediate story of UUFN and my comfortable life is not as improbable or as indebted to loving sacrifices as Senator Booker's life. But I feel the same kind of gratitude he expresses in his speeches and his book. Gratitude for the people who have made my life possible. In living memory, 62 years ago, a small group came together and decided that this community needed to exist. And they literally built it up from nothing with their bare hands. Fellowship Hall still stands behind me. Since then, countless people have been involved in nurturing the congregation in a self-reinforcing cycle. We make it a place that newcomers want to be today, and tomorrow, those former newcomers contribute to making it hospitable to the next people in the door. Without the love driving the hard work of all of those people, I wouldn't be who I am today. So what does that mean, that I wouldn't be who I am today? What did my over 500 Sundays here really amount to? When I think back, many of my memories of UUFN and the community around it were primarily fun. My best friends were here. I remember youth group overnights. With the friends we made here, I remember backyard plays, countless game nights, sleepovers, and camping trips. But this wasn't just a social club to me. I also remember the way UUFN taught me values. Here's one example. In middle school, my best friend Kai went vegetarian, inspired by values that were cultivated here. At the time, my parents described me as a carnivore. They had recently convinced me that lettuce was okay to eat, with enough Caesar dressing and croutons on top. So I made fun of Kai quite a bit at first, and didn't consider changing my diet. That is, until one day, a few years later, when I did. One friend of mine had recently shared a video with me about factory farming, and I was reading a book in school that outlined the environmental impacts of meat. And I was a 15-year-old kid who liked to believe myself to be moral, so I was inspired to at least reduce my meat consumption. So I did my best. I started making myself eat small servings of food that I knew I would need to like if I wanted to be a healthy vegetarian. This included nearly all vegetables and even beans. I also started experimenting with imitation meat. This was really hard. I remember wanting a snack one afternoon and telling myself that for the next hour, the only thing I could eat was hummus and pita chips, which I did not like. At least the hummus. And if I really didn't do it, I could wait an hour. And I remember it being revolting, nearly gagging at one point. But I made it through a decent serving of hummus, and the next day, I disliked hummus a little less. Finally, after a few weeks of these baby steps, I went cold tofurkey. My parents took me to the store to stock up on imitation meat, and I said I was going to try to be vegetarian and see how far I could make it. The first 2 weeks were miserable. I craved meat at every meal. I ate unhealthy amounts of cheese, soy nuggets, and junk food. I wasn't sure that I could do it. My parents were legitimately incredulous, while also being wonderfully supportive. But after about 2 weeks, it became a habit. The craving subsided. And before I knew it, those vegetables and beans weren't disgusting anymore. After a few months, I even liked them. And to this day, I don't eat meat. I undertook this challenging journey, driven by the values I grew up with here and the examples I had seen of others living them out. And I made it through. But even more important than the friends or the values, UUFN believed in me. The most meaningful instance of this is when I started attending Welcoming Congregation workshops. Welcoming Congregation is a program developed by the UUA for churches to first educate their congregations about LGBT issues and then have a congregational vote affirming their status as an actively welcoming congregation to people of all sexualities and gender identities. When I was in middle school, a friend invited me to stay after church one day for their introductory workshop. I asked my parents, and they found a way to spend 2 extra hours in town so that they could drive me home afterwards. A few weeks later, I attended another workshop in the series, unprompted. I don't really know the details, but I guess the facilitators were impressed with my engagement and participation. The next thing I knew, I was invited onto the committee that planned these workshops and other LGBT-related events and advocacy. And so, at the age of 13, I was on a committee. I was planning events and facilitating workshops targeted at adults. I was attending monthly meetings in the boardroom with agendas. And as far as I could tell, everyone was treating me just like another committee member. I'm sure there were actually countless ways that they treated me a little differently. My teammates likely ensured that I had more oversight than others might need. But who among us hasn't served on a committee with an adult who needs a little oversight? Being called into service as a meaningful contributor, and not just in kid ways, was one of the most empowering experiences of my life. And I mean that. Earlier this year, I took some time to reflect on the growth and successes of my adult life. As I was leaving this church at age 17, if you had asked me what my next 7 years would hold, I would have told you that I planned to become a very good software engineer and either get a job writing difficult code or start a company. At the time, I was a precocious but socially awkward kid. Got off page as well. There we go. I was much more focused on technical topics than people-oriented topics. As it turns out, here is what I'm most proud of over the past 7 years. Senior year of college, I ran my university's peer counseling group. This is a 70-student volunteer organization that provided a vital 24/7 mental health service on campus. Now that I work, I consistently surprise people with the maturity of my leadership, with my ability to direct myself and mentor others. I've brought my values to my software engineering work, making a difference by advocating for real change to the work environments to make them more inclusive. As one example, I recently initiated a gender-neutral bathroom program in anticipation of a non-binary student that we had visiting the office. And so, this spring, I found myself in a peaceful park near my house, walking an outdoor labyrinth, asking myself, how did I get here? I had never really reflected on that journey of growing as a leader as I mitigated my awkwardness in college and beyond. In following that thought, I asked, when did I really start being a leader? What were the little steps that built up the strength and confidence to make the big steps possible? And I pinpointed this moment when I was 13, where I was called onto the Welcoming Congregation Committee. Someone believed in me to be a leader a little early. And perhaps more amazingly, no one vetoed it. No one said, do we really want a 13-year-old on our committee? Or if someone did, their concerns did not win out. This experience showed me that my efforts could make a difference in the communities around me. It taught me to think bigger, that I should not fear stretching myself and doing more than I think I'm capable of. It gave me a sense of empowerment that I have carried forward. This first call into the conspiracy of love was life-changing. Like much of my experience here, I did not appreciate its impact on me at the time. I hadn't sought it out, and it didn't seem like that big of a deal. It was just a way to contribute to church and push the world in a direction that I wanted to see. But it laid a foundation that served as a basis for much bigger growth and accomplishments. And I really don't know that I would have been ready to take opportunities like running the Peer Counseling Center if not for this starting point. Without UUFN believing in me, I might not be the leader that I am today, and the people whose lives I've touched might be worse off too. Thank you. Now, I refuse to come in here and preach about how great my experience was growing up at UUFN while ignoring an elephant in the room. I think it's fair to say that UUFN has had a rough year. Reverend Andrew departed at the beginning of the summer, and Terry, the director of religious education, did the same towards the end of the summer. As always happens in these cases, regardless of circumstances, some members of the community left as well. From what I hear, the youth program has been hit especially hard. Now, I'm no longer a member of this community, and I love San Francisco, so I hope to stay away for a long time. I don't have nearly the context on who you all are now and what you value to tell you in detail what to do. But I do have two wishes for you in this time of transition. First, do not forget the conspiracy of love that has brought this community together and made it a place you have chosen to call home. All of us here, as Senator Booker's father puts it, drink deeply from wells that we did not dig. We are all indebted to each other and those who came before us. If those who came before us had not shown up and found a common vision and sacrificed time and money, we would not have this community. If those who have inhabited this community alongside us had not shown up and bought into a common vision and sacrificed, we would still not have this community, or it would be different, at least. Community is a team sport, and each contribution enriches everyone else. And if we did not have this community, or if it were not as rich and as strong, none of us would have had the good times and the growth and the support that we've experienced within these walls. This Thanksgiving weekend, I feel that we should all be thanking each other for making this community together. It seems that now is the time that UUFN needs people to step up more than ever in my lifetime. We need people to rise to the opportunity of contributing to a consensus on the next phase of this congregation. Then we need people to do the hard, uncertain, sometimes uncomfortable work to make that vision real. A community can only thrive in a new stage when individual members make leaps of faith and contribute. Many of you are still the same people who helped to raise me and my friends, so I know you are up to the task. My second wish is that I hope UUFN remains a great place to grow up, a place that nurtures, empowers, and challenges its youth. That's what this community did for me, and it was truly life-changing. Thank you. Amen.